Thank you for listening to the Streams Church Weekly Sermon Podcast. We are a community that strives to know Jesus and make him known. If you like our podcast, subscribe and leave us a great rating on Apple Podcasts. Thank you, and we hope you enjoy.
Morning, everybody. Well, this is different with the lights today. I don't have a joke about it. Everybody else has already spent all the good jokes. Earlier this week, I got a text, Sean sent a text asking about if I might be able to preach today, and I was excited because it was just last Sunday. I was sitting up in the booth, and I was doing sound, and I was thinking, I haven't had a chance to preach for a while. I kind of miss getting to do that, and I was going to text him, but he texted me. So he's actually getting ready to start a new series next week, and so he asked me if I had kind of a one-off message that I could give, and I do. As a matter of fact, in my life, there have been seasons where I feel like God has inspired me to have a specific message for specific audiences, and so we're going to talk a little bit about that here today. But first, the main thing that I want to kind of ask you guys to think about is, why are you here today? Why did you come? Now, that sounds very uninviting. It's not meant to, you know, you got to read it with the right tone, not why are you here? It's... why did you choose to come to church this morning? Why did you choose to come to Streams? there's a variety of reasons why people choose to come to Streams, and my daughter's running slides for us today. Thank you, Gracie. We're going to look at some of the reasons that I think are really common for why people come. the first one is they have a sense of duty. A lot of you maybe have grown up in the church. You had a grandma that, you know, she never missed, and you would disappoint her if you missed. And so we come to church sometimes out of a sense of duty because it's what we're supposed to do. Sometimes we come out of a sense of guilt. We come because, well, we know everything we've done this week and all the things that we've done wrong. And this is our time to come and try to kind of absolve ourselves of that guilt, and we feel like we need to be there. Now, one time I was sitting right in this area. This is the righteous side. I don't know if you know that. In every preaching class I ever took, they always said, if you can alienate half of your audience right at the start, that's the best way to go. I'm obviously kidding. But I was sitting right over here, and I remember hearing Mark Buckley was here to preach, and he just casually mentioned this verse when he was talking about guilt and how we sometimes have struggles in our own lives of forgiving ourselves of our sin. And he referenced 1 John 3:10. And so that stuck with me for a while, and when I have a chance to talk about guilt, I always want to share this verse. It says, if our hearts condemn us, now this whole chapter here is about love. It's about how, like, you know, God loved us and we love one another, and that's how we know what love is. We know what God is because of love. It says, if our hearts condemn us, which I've lived with that, we know that God is greater than our hearts and he knows everything. So the idea that someone that knows everything you've ever done wrong and still just would choose to love you so much, there's no reason for us to hold any kind of guilt in our hearts. Another reason that we come sometimes to church is because it's our social center. This is where we want to hang out with Christians. We want to have that positive influence in our lives or our kids' lives. And so it really kind of becomes a social center for us. My mother, my parents are at a church in Oklahoma. Hopefully they watch this. I don't know if they will. They're at a church in Oklahoma, and they go out every Sunday after church to like a Golden Corral kind of buffet place in Norman. And there's like a certain lady who she's like in charge of it. And she's like, one time we went to town to visit, and they're like, well, we have to go out to the lunch. And I was like, have to? What, can't we just go out as a family for lunch? No. We have to go out to the lunch. Because this lady organizes this, and if the pastor and his wife and now son and daughter-in-law whatever didn't come, that'd be horrible. So it's like, it was definitely that lady's social center. You know, she's like, everything revolves around this. I know for a lot of people, church becomes about your kids' future and their faith. lots of people, as you grow up, maybe you might have been in church when you were younger at one point or another, and then as a young adult you maybe kind of start to show less enthusiasm maybe for your participation in church, but then you have kids. And that's something that a lot of times drives us. We're like, I want better for my kids. I want my kids to have a solid foundation for their faith. So that's why we come to church. At Streams, I feel like we have a solid, solid base of people that are consistently here. And I think if I were to try to put a a tag maybe on why they're here. I think that at this church, a lot of people come because church is your spiritual gym. It's where you come to get spiritually strong. You come here to work out. You come here to learn. You come here to be challenged, to have your faith stretched. I mentioned at the beginning that at some point, different seasons in my life, I feel like God has given me two very specific messages that he wants me to share whenever I have a chance. Whether it's in an opportunity like this because I'm preaching, or whether it's just in conversations with people with things they're going through in life. And so I'm going to give those to you today. And this first one, that I've put them kind of, I guess God gave them to me in my heart in this form of almost like a cliche. But the first one is, you are stronger than you think. And I want you to hear that this morning, that you are stronger than you think. I do believe that a lot of you are here because you want your faith to be stronger, and I want you to know that it's stronger than even what you understand right now. Now, that is loosely based on the Nike slogan, you are faster than you think. When I was in college age, or maybe just out of college, I remember seeing like commercials about Nike. You know, I think they were trying to tap into that idea that a kid has when you get a brand new pair of shoes, and all of a sudden now you can run faster. You know you do, it's like fact. And so they had this whole campaign, you're faster than you think. I thought it was an amazing campaign. It was pretty short-lived. I think maybe because people like me spun it and thought more like, you are fatter than you think. Which is still, if you think about it, the same motivator to get up and run or whatever. Obviously, the positive spin of being faster than you think is probably preferred. But, well, I was just kind of trying to be self-reflective. All right, so you are stronger than you think. That hit me, honestly, I can't even remember the exact day, probably 10 or 15 years ago. I remember at one point thinking, when we were reading at church, we were reading through the book, of the story of Joseph. And that's when the phrase kind of struck me, was the idea of being stronger than you think. Joseph, the story of Joseph is amazing. One of my favorite stories in the Old Testament, you know that he was like super cocky, had all this attitude. I cannot relate to this guy. He had, okay, some people at least got it. I don't like to think of myself as cocky, but I know I have attitude sometimes. but Joseph really, he would come and he'd brag about his dreams. You guys aren't going to believe this. I had this dream and all of you were bowing down to me. It was amazing. His brothers don't take kindly to that. And he has multiple dreams, and he feels the need every time to tell them what the dreams were. And his brothers get so tired of it, and they get so tired of the fact that he is the favored son, that they say, let's just kill him. And they take him, and they basically throw him in a hole, and they're debating whether or not they're going to kill him. And I believe it was Reuben, the oldest, who's like, hey, wait, there's some people coming. Why don't we just sell him to them? And then we'll throw some blood on the jacket Dad gave him, and we'll just tell him that he was killed by an animal. And so they sell him instead, and he's taken off to Egypt. And so then throughout this whole life that Joseph goes through, he rises up to power in Potiphar's house. And then Potiphar's wife, I don't know what her deal was, but Joseph must have had it going on. She was like very attracted to Joseph. But Joseph was a righteous man. He's like, I'm not doing that. And so when he tried to escape one time when she was advancing on him, she grabbed his jacket. Man, this guy has got bad luck with his jackets now that I think about it. And so she then goes and complains to her husband, and she's like, he came in here and he tried to sleep with me. Look, he even left his jacket. He left in such haste. And so Potiphar, who's thinking, Joseph is like my right-hand man. What? He's come up. He's been so good to me. Now he has to have Joseph, even if he believes it or not. My gut tells me that he probably doesn't believe his wife, but he can't, like, he has to save face in the community and society. So he's like, he's got to be arrested. Take him away. And he goes into prison. So now he's gone, like, from this, you know, in a pit with his brothers debating whether or not to kill him, to a slave, to running some rich guy's household, to now in prison again. or for the first time, I guess, at this point, but he's in prison. And in there, he starts to move up in his position within the prison, where like the warden's like, man, this guy's golden. No matter what job you put Joseph in, he seems to move into the second in command. And so he's now recognized in the prison. And so he ends up finally at one point, you know, in the story, where there's Pharaoh, and he is Pharaoh's right-hand person. When he gets out of prison, thanks to interpreting some dreams for Pharaoh, Pharaoh says, you are, in terms of this kingdom, everything is yours except for this crown. I'm the actual king, but you run it. So, I mean, this is big, big changes for him. His brothers come. They don't recognize him. There's famine in the land. They come to him. And I wish I could see what that room was like when he finally reveals himself. In the scripture, it talks about it, where it says that when he revealed himself to his brothers, they trembled in fear, as they should. I mean, how scary would that be? We thought about killing this guy, but instead we sold him. We told daddy was dead. It's like, basically, other than actually taking his life, we killed the memory of Joseph entirely. And now he holds everything. He holds all the cards. And Joseph, instead of being angry with his brothers, it says that he stood in the room there and he just wept. He just cried because he had missed and loved his brothers. And so the dreams of his brothers bowing down to him all came true. But he was able to just live in that moment of forgiveness that this is my family. These are my brothers. I thought I would never see them again. I don't know about you, but I feel like forgiveness is hard. I have had to forgive my brother and my sister. They have never tried to sell me into slavery, but we have had some small and some large instances in our lives. You have had to forgive, or have been in a position at least where probably you should forgive someone of something great, something big, and that's hard to do. But I want to remind you, you are stronger than you think. You can get to that point of forgiveness. And forgiveness is not just, okay, well, I'm not going to hold it against them anymore. Forgiveness is actually wishing well on that person. It's, I don't know about you. So do you guys celebrate when other people get good things? It took some work. That wasn't natural for me. But I am now pretty much to the point that if someone else gets something awesome, I don't immediately internalize it as, oh, but I didn't get that. Instead, I'm genuinely able to be like, man, that is so cool for you. Because that is God's blessing on that person, whether it came from God or their boss or whoever. One way or another, God's involved. They have enjoyed some sort of blessing. That's the kind of attitude that really true forgiveness becomes. So even when I've had like some of my worst situations with people, and it can be hard, you are stronger than you think. You can get to that point of wishing the blessing on other people. There's a verse. Well, first I want to mention the wisdom of my favorite Christian band, U2. I've talked about them before. There's a line in one of their songs that says, it's not a hill, it's a mountain as you start out the climb. And that's what I feel like. Whether it's forgiveness, that's one of the big ones, which obviously, you know, I'm kind of focused on right here, but different things in our life. If we have a challenge in front of us, it looks like a mountain when we start, but it's actually just a hill. When I was a kid, we had Killer Hill right around the corner from where I grew up. I think I talked to you one time about driving to Thrifties, or driving. I didn't drive when I was 11, but I got on my bike and I would ride to Thrifties. but if you came out of my neighborhood in the other direction, on Valley View, there was this Killer Hill. Now, all it is just a hill that goes up and over the freeway. We see them all the time. And you drive on them all the time. Have you ever walked up a hill like that that you've only driven over before? I did that, like when I was a kid, I'm like, we drive over this all the time. And I was like, oh, I'm gonna go over Killer Hill. And I'm on my little bike, oh my gosh. Okay, there's a reason we call this Killer Hill. And because on the way up, it seems hard and it seems much bigger than it is. But in reality, just like my favorite band's lyrics, it seems like a mountain when you start the climb. But you gotta start the climb. And then you'll come to realize that it's definitely attainable. There's a verse in Jeremiah 12 that really has struck me when it comes to this idea of being stronger than I think. I don't think this is like a promise from God. You guys maybe are reading it right now, and I'm going to get to it for sure. It's not a promise from God, but I definitely believe that this is a picture of God's expectations for us. If you've raced with men on foot, and they have worn you out, how are you going to compete with horses? That's like, what in the world? You expect me to race a horse? Now I thought about this before, when I was preparing. Anybody know how fast horses run? I don't. 45 miles an hour? 50 miles an hour? I don't know. The fastest human, Carl Lewis, it's like 30 or less, I think. It's something like that. So could you imagine me running like 45, 50 miles an hour? If I did that, I could just run to work. You know, I'd be there in like 10 minutes. God says to Jeremiah, if you've raced with men and they've worn you out, how are you going to compete with horses? If you stumble in the safe country, how are you going to manage in the thickets by the Jordan? And so it kind of goes to a cliche that I usually hate. There's a cliche that I hear lots of times that says, it's going to get worse before it gets better. You've heard that. We only hear those in bad times, right? It's like we're in bad times, like right in the midst of COVID, you know, they all throw out, it's never going to be normal again. And they come up with a new normal phrase. But there was lots of doctors, lots of people that would say, it's going to get worse before it gets better. They say that with storms. No matter what, in life, a lot of times we hear that. And I really don't like that phrase. But honestly, you could say the same basic thing, slightly different, and I'm fine with it. The idea of being challenged, it's going to be a challenge. That is okay with me. Because if I'm going to be challenged, I hear both some difficulty with that, but I hear an opportunity to show off what I can do, an opportunity to get stronger, an opportunity to overcome something. There's probably going to be a story there, is the way I feel. And so when I feel like God wants me to compete with horses, God wants me to be able to navigate my way through the tough times in life, through the thickets by the Jordan, I'm okay with that because it's only going to make me a stronger person. He has expectations and goals on you that you can't imagine. For instance, I never thought I would be a firefighter. Never thought I would be. But a week and a half ago I was, or a week ago I was. You guys will love this story, I think. I am driving to pick up my groceries at the Walmart neighborhood market. I see smoke in the air in the neighborhood right behind the Walmart neighborhood market. And it's fresh smoke. And so I turn into the neighborhood instead, and I'm just like looking at the smoke cloud, and I'm making turns, and I end up right in front of this fire. And there's an open gate, and there's a person in the back, couple people on the fence with hoses, and so I get out of my car and I go over there, and this lady who is, I don't know, she's like 4 foot nothing, she's trying to spray her hose over the fence, and she's like, oh good, you're tall, can you take the hose and you could probably see it. So I stand up and I can see, and in the backyard behind this house, there is this significant amount of shrubs that are like, it's like ivy, I guess, kind of in a fence, and it's just burning like mad. Her husband's on the corner of the fence, and we're here spraying, and then the people in the backyard are got buckets out of their pool, and we're all like throwing water on this thing. And so she brings me a step stool. I'm like, oh, how courteous. And I'm like, being a firefighter is really not that hard. I'm like, dude, this is pretty easy. I mean, the gear might be heavy for them to wear, but I'm like, for me, this was okay. So I get up on the thing, and I'm like spraying, and I'm accidentally spraying the people a little bit, you know, because they're at the pool. I didn't really do that, but the other guy did. It was kind of funny. They're like, ah, you're kidding me. So we put out that fire. And then at one point, then like the nice lady that, I'm not even in her backyard. We're in like a house that's not, I don't think it's occupied. I don't even know. But we're just spraying it all down. We get the fire stopped. And then I get down, and I'm like, okay, here's your hose back. And I just walk out and get in my car, and I'm thinking, all right, I got to watch the news. Because there's going to be some story about, you know, an unknown man, you know, got out of his car, you know, an everyday hero. Didn't make the news. But, like, I just tell you that because I thought it was a fun story. The way that I could tie it in, though, is God does have expectations on us that we can't imagine. That's loose. I understand. But he does have expectations. He has big goals for us. He wants us to be up to challenges. So when challenges come your way, You should welcome that. And you should remember that you are stronger than you think. So the other common reason, I had the two common reasons I feel like people come to church. The other common reason I feel like people come to church is because they are broken. And the church is their hospital. So it may be a spiritual brokenness. It may be a physical brokenness. But people come to church often because it's their hospital. If you're feeling broken today, you're in the right place. I know at Streams, I'm often in the service, and I may not necessarily feel broken, but there's someone that's up here that's like, I can sense it. I know that there's someone that came in today whose heart is heavy. And it's awesome to me to see how open we are to the Spirit and that we recognize that this is a place for the spiritually broken. In the Beatitudes, Jesus said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And I've often struggled with what poor in spirit means. And then I thought, I've listened to a couple sermons and I've researched it. If I'm poor in money, it means I don't have money. So if I'm poor in spirit, that means I don't have spirit. And that might be you today. You might be sitting here feeling poor in spirit. You're in the right place. Amen. This is the place where you come if you feel poor in spirit. We are here for one another, and the Spirit of God is in this place here for you. So I mentioned that God's given me two messages. The first one is that you're stronger than you think, and the second one that I feel like has been burned into my heart is that all is not lost. No matter what it is you're going through, all is not lost. I've talked several times about like our road to parenthood. I got a lot of you guys that have been in here for a long time. You've heard about it. I'm not going to tell the whole stories again. Some of you are like, "Oh, good." I'm just kidding. But like Jen and I couldn't have kids naturally. We tried the medical route. It didn't work. We did foster care, fostered 14 kids and adopted 3 and built a family that way. And we have been extremely blessed by that. And I know, at least I can say, that I know what heartache feels like. I've been through true, genuine heartache, and it is hard sometimes to feel like all is not lost. We have to remember that with that concept, we've already won. On a more lighthearted note, my senior year of high school, I was as tall as I am now. I was 70, give or take, pounds lighter than I am now. I was like maybe 150 pounds soaking wet. I was as tall as I am, and I jumped rope every day so I could jump out of the gym. And I had a good friend who was in my church youth group with me, Jermaine Galloway. Jermaine was 6'10". I was measly 6'1". But I was his backup. He was a junior, and he was being scouted by all these colleges. Big name colleges were coming and scouting at practice. So me and Jermaine, though, we had a bet going. Who's going to be the first person to dunk in a game? Because I know, you're thinking, "Tony, seriously. I could dunk, I'm telling you." So me and Jermaine had this bet going. Now remember, Jermaine is the starter. Jermaine played Division I. He went to DePaul. I was his backup, so I got a couple minutes a game. So it seems like it's not really fair, right? Jermaine missed a couple here or there, but he always got fouled. So, that was his excuse, was he got fouled trying to do his dunk. My senior year, we had this play drawn up, me and my buddy, where if the court is like that way, and this is like the baseline, and we got the ball, but we have to go that way, we all set screens for each other to try to get someone open. But my job was to just turn and run back and look for that football pass, and I'm in front of everybody on the way. So I look at my buddy Kevin, give him a nod, and we're like, "Yeah, okay." And then he does the whole boom. And guys start to set screens, and I turn and run, and there's the ball in the air. I catch that ball. I'm like, "Ooh, I got this." And I am so excited. I don't think my adrenaline has ever been pumping as much as it was in those moments. So I'm dribbling. I'm looking at my footing and stuff. I'm getting my footing right. I jump. I get to inside the free throw line. I'm not Jordan. You guys are probably thinking I could do that, but I get inside where I know I can make it. I get up, I get that ball up, and you could just hear like the chaos in the gym. We got a 6-foot white guy that's going for a dunk wide open. And I mean, I was a nerd too. I was not popular. People knew who I was. I mean, I was, I think, generally likable, but I wasn't in student council. I wasn't like a popular person. And so they're like, who's that guy? I don't know, but he's going for it. So I'm going down. I get up in the air. I get that ball well over the rim, and I throw it down as hard as I can. And it just barely rolls off the back of my fingers, hits the back of the rim, and shoots way out to half court. The whole gym. I mean, my high school, we won state championships multiple years, so we were like, basketball was our thing. I was really just a bench warmer, so it was cool to be on the team. But I had my moment, and you could hear the crowd on both sides of the gym, this collective like, oh. And I mean, that was like in the waning seconds of the game, but I was like, okay, well, whatever. Pretty embarrassing. Pretty public failure in front of all of my peers. As a matter of fact, one of my friends, the one who made the pass to me, Kevin, he went on to work for Disney. He's an artist. In my yearbook, he drew a big old picture for me of everything that we had done because we went to elementary and middle school together and all these memories. And then when you turn the page, but the most exciting thing was, and you turn the page, and it's like this ball flying away from a rim. And it's got like a face on it, like, ah, like the screaming ball, was the missed dunk. I had kids at school like the next day, like, oh, good job, Tony. Oh, great job, man. Like really harassing me. And honestly, it didn't even bug me because I was like, whatever, I know I can dunk and I had a chance to do it and I missed. But also, we won. We won the game. So in the big picture, while I may have had a pretty embarrassing public moment, we won the game. And so what does it really matter? That's the kind of attitude I feel like we need to sometimes pull in when we're going into these difficult situations. I wrote this down specifically. I want to make sure I get this right because I don't want this to come out wrong. I would never mean to trivialize what we're going through. And I know telling a story about a missed dunk when you're in high school doesn't compare to much of the pain maybe that you're dealing with at times in life right now. But I want to remind you that the battle has already been won. And the big picture is, whatever pain you're feeling right now will not be remembered. It won't be remembered. It won't be remembered by anybody else. And if you remember it, it's going to be faint because the battle has already been won. There's a verse that I found that goes, I feel pretty strongly with this idea that all is not lost. When calamity comes, it's in Proverbs 14, the wicked are brought down, but even in death, the righteous seek refuge in God. The absolute worst thing that can happen to you is to be killed, to die. That's the absolute worst thing that can happen to us in our life. But even then, we still win. It's like we can't lose. It doesn't feel that way at times, I know. But it's like we can't lose. No matter what, God is always our refuge. Do you remember last spring I preached a one-point sermon? I remember preaching and I was like, I only got one point. As a matter of fact, it was so much fun, I kept withholding the point to tell you what it was. And I was like, I would say, there's just one point. Now before I get to it, and I would go on to something else or whatever, and I even had someone after service tell me, I had to go to the bathroom so bad, but I wanted to hear what your point was. So it worked. Does anyone, though, remember what that one point was? Oh, never mind. No, I get it. That one point, there's only a few sermons where that really stick out in my mind too, and that one always has. What you know trumps what you feel. And it was based on Romans 8:28, where it says, and we know that in all things God will work for the good of those who love him. So it doesn't matter what you're feeling, we know it. We know it's the truth. God will always work things out for your good. Did I put that verse up there? I don't remember. Gracie, did I have that verse? Yeah, slide 9. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him and who are called according to his purpose. Go ahead and go to the next slide, Gracie, because we're going to stay in the same chapter here. Verse 31, it says, if God is for us, who can be against us? Still in that same chapter. We know that God's going to work everything out for good. And if he's for us, who can be against us? I love this one. Who will bring any charge against those whom God has chosen? Who is going to challenge the king's son? I thought of a fun story. Ellie's not in here. She's homesick today, so hopefully she's watching. So at school, I'm an assistant principal. I have access to everybody's data. So Ellie had a volleyball game a couple days ago, Thursday night. It was the Dig Pink night where they do, everybody wears pink, and it's a breast cancer thing, and it's a fundraiser and stuff. And Ellie had her pink shirt, but she had switched into her jersey, and she left her shirt in the stands, like on the team side. She tells me the next morning, someone stole my shirt. There was a kid, I saw he was wearing it. And I was like, what's the kid's name? She's like, I don't know. And I'm like, I got cameras. We're gonna figure out who that kid is. You guys are all silent like this is real serious. So the next day, on Friday, at the end of the school day, I'm like, oh yeah, that's right, I was gonna figure out who took Ellie's shirt. So I bring up the camera in the gym. Boom, I know that kid. I'm gonna call him Tony for the moment, so that in case he does watch, which is doubtful, but. So I see him, and I'm like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? He's one of my favorite kids. He's a senior, and he's wearing the shirt. But it was another girl on the volleyball team who saw it, and she's like, oh, there's a shirt here. Here, you go ahead and wear that one, because he wanted to wear a pink shirt. So I went, and I told the girl the next day at practice, I was like, hey, I need to get that shirt back for Ellie, but I want you to tell Tony that I'm super mad, and I'm coming for him. And she's like, oh, that'll be fun. Yes, yes, I will. So, and in my mind, I thought, well, that's kind of a parallel here. It's so nice having my daughters at my school. When anyone dares to ask them out to homecoming or prom, I'm immediately looking that kid up. What neighborhood does that kid live in? What kind of grades does he get? Does he have siblings? What kind of stock does he come from? So in this scenario, I'm like, you actually made a significant mistake there, because you took the shirt of one of the assistant principal's kids. And I've got his home address. I could have driven over there Friday and been like, Tony, I want that shirt back. Also, here's our SRO. She's going to press charges for stolen property. I could do all kinds of stuff. When we recognize that the Bible's real clear, you are a son or a daughter of God, who is going to dare come at you? Whoever does, they're not going to win, because you have the Lord as your Father. As we look up one more verse, I'm going to go ahead and ask the band to come up. And it's one more verse in Romans chapter 8. Verse 37. In all these things, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. Carlos, I stole that from you. In all these things. Earlier it said that in verse 28, in all things God works for the good of those who love him. In this one it says, in all these things we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. This is all in that same paragraph from Romans 8:28 that starts out with, we know God works things out for good. Who's going to dare come challenge you? The whole time I feel like that section of Romans 8 is really trying to drive both of those messages that God has burned into me. You are stronger than you think, and all is not lost, no matter what. If you're feeling broken, remember both of those ideas. Not only is not everything lost, but you are stronger than you think. No one is going to dare come at you. While the devil may try, he's never going to win. This morning, I want to invite you to try to remember the fact that no matter what, you are more than a conqueror.